Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Films for kids and about kids have a special place in the young world. They also have a special place in the St. Louis Zoo. We'll explain a little bit later. But first, chances are those rock-solid New Year's resolutions so many of us made to correct bad habits are already a memory. We don't seem to be very successful at replacing bad behaviors with good. The question is why and what can be done about it. Well, some interesting research has been conducted on the subject of correcting bad habits and having them stick. Washington University psychology professor Roddy Roediger, contributed to that research and is co-author of Make It Stick, The Science of Successful Learning. He joins me in studio. Roddy, nice to see you again. Thanks for being here. Good to see you, Don. Well, in a sense, I guess it's too late to be talking about New Year's resolutions because most people have already forgotten them.
Yes, that's true, that we find the recidivism rate is quite high, but it's never too late to start a resolution. There's nothing special about New Year's Day. Many people start on the beginning of a new month, or since that's already passed too, the beginning of a new week, which is today. So we could start today, and there are a number of things that psychologists have found out, tips, strategies to help you break your old bad habits and to come up with new habits that would replace them.
It seems overwhelming. The numbers that I've seen, almost overwhelming, the number of resolutions that fail. Again, I'll just keep it in the New Year's perspective for a second. It seems overwhelming, and the number of the people just don't abide by them.
Yes, they often get off to the wrong kind of start. Let me talk about one way to help you get off to the right start. Often you will tell yourself a vague resolution like, I would like to lose 20 pounds or 5 pounds or pick your number, or I would like to start exercising. And that's the extent of it. That's all you do. You say that to yourself, and then maybe you do it for a few days. You try to cut down on your eating, or you exercise a bit more. But then by the end of the week, you're back to normal, doing what you always did. Let me suggest a new way to start if you are serious about, let's say, losing weight and exercising more. I'm picking those because those are very common resolutions. What you might do is actually write down a contract with yourself. Commit on paper exactly what you're planning to do and how. So you would say, I am breaking my habit of having this big breakfast I always have, and then you find a moderate one online that you think you can live with and say, I'm going to have this every morning instead. And furthermore, when you write down these tips, and I'll get to more in a moment, you don't just do it for yourself. You tell your family. You tell your coworkers. You publicly commit to it. Maybe if you're serious, you join some sort of group, a Weight Watchers group or a exercise group, or you get a friend to say, we're going to work out 5 times a week, and you actually do that. You don't have to join a gym. That's sometimes helpful. Having a personal trainer, that's often helpful for exercise too. So in other words, you make a public commitment. You just don't privately tell yourself, oh, I think I'll try to lose weight. You go out there and you tell everybody you know, you commit to it, you write it down.
Well, telling other people what you're up to, it seems to me that's kind of a self-shame approach.
Exactly.
It'd be embarrassing to have to admit that you've fallen off the wagon, as it were.
Right. And then people will be asking you about how it's going. You can tell people, I mean, not obnoxiously, but if they ask how it's going, you can chart also your progress. If you keep a diary, how you're doing every day, what you're eating, and how much you're exercising, keep that every day, and that's kind of a reward. You write down every day what you're thinking or what you're actually doing, and you can see how you're accomplishing it. And, of course, weigh yourself every day if weight loss is a goal. And you'll bump up and down some, but you should see a gradual decline, and that should also be gratifying. That would be your reward.
You mentioned weight loss, and that's basically the essence of your book, is it not? That's what you use as the key example?
Well, it was more in a column we wrote. The book is actually about the science of learning. It's more about education and training and coaching. We had to kind of adapt what we wrote in the Making It Stick, the Science of Successful Learning, to New Year's resolutions because it's mostly about other things. But we were asked to do that for Quartz Magazine, and that was the article you saw.
Do you think it's fair to suggest that most people go into these kinds of projects, self-help projects, if you will, anticipating that they're going to fail?
Well, I think if they go into it half-heartedly, that they anticipate they will fail. But if you finally determine you're going to do it and you pull out all the stops, so I mentioned some. Another thing is the way you describe it to people, that experiments have been done varying verbs of commitment. So if you say, I want to try to lose weight, well, that's highly qualified already. Suppose you say, I'm determined to lose weight. You tell your friends that I'm committed to losing 10 pounds. If you use more powerful verbs when you express yourself, the research shows you're much more likely to really stick with it. And write that down. Say it every morning when you get up. I've got to remember all day today. Don't fall into my old habits of eating too much at lunch or having dessert at dinner. I've got to change my habits. And changing habits that are ingrained by a lifetime of experience is incredibly difficult to do.
Well, what would you point to as to the principal reason why people fail to meet these objectives?
Well, I think there are a number of reasons, but lack of public commitment, that you're only half-heartedly committed to yourself, then you never really give it a chance. If you can get started and get through the first 2 or 3 weeks, those are really the hard ones, and then the new habits become more ingrained. Keep in mind what you're doing that's maladaptive, say eating too much or not exercising enough. That's been built up probably through a lifetime. It's not like you exercised every day and then suddenly you stop, probably. It's that you probably haven't done it enough for years. And so now you're trying to recommit to yourself. And I think we find that harder to do as we get old. I don't know any research on that, but just from my own personal experience, it seemed easier for me to commit something and show self-control and self-regulation when I was younger than I can now. So you really have to recommit yourself, rededicate yourself.
So the first step, though, in a journey such as this is really recognizing that you've got a behavior that needs to be changed.
Absolutely. I think many of us already have that. changing it is the problem. I mean, sometimes we don't recognize it. You can be drinking alcohol too much and thinking, oh, I really don't have a problem. I can get through the day fine, but you still might be drinking too much. In fact, many people we find are. You see it in tragedies all over, from drunk driving to others. But recognizing your problem is the first step, but certainly for overweight, all you have to do is step on the scale or look in the mirror and you realize what you see what you see.
We started talking about New Year's resolutions, and the very first thing you mentioned was you establish a date such as that at the beginning of the week or what have you. Is that a good idea? I mean, is it a good idea to pick a specific time, say tomorrow or next week, I'm going to start changing?
Well, I think let's say you're picking next Monday. Then this week you could spend planning on how to do that. I think you can't just say, oh, I'm going to do this out of the blue. You really have to plan out how you're going to change. One other caution is I think a lot of people change too many things all at once. Another approach, people differ on this, and actually there's not, to my knowledge, great research on it. Should I try changing one or two behaviors at first? Let's say right now I work out 2 times a week. Well, let me try going up to 3 before I say I'm going to work out 7 days a week. Let me, if I feel like I have too big a lunch every day, let me cut back on 1 meal a day. Not skip it, but just eat very healthily. Have a salad every day for lunch without heavy dressing and stuff. And so start with little changes. Other people find it more comfortable just to say, look, if I'm committed to do this, let me try to change several things at once and really make a major commitment. So I don't think there's a right way to do it. The gradual approach, of course, as long as you really stick with it, works. You just add a behavior a week. Change one thing this week or 2 things. Change 2 more next week and so forth until you finally ingrain habits that are healthy ones. You're finally working out 4 days a week, 5 days a week, and even the days you don't work out at a gym or something, you're taking a nice walk. that would really help. Similarly for eating, if you work on a meal at a time, well, in 3 weeks you've worked on three meals, and try to cut out snacking in between, which bothers a lot of people.
So there's a danger then in being overly ambitious about it.
I think some people start off as, it's kind of cold turkey. You just try to change all your behaviors at once, and you know, you're 50 years old or whatever, and you've just had these ingrained habits for so long, it's very difficult to do. Especially, you know, you're in a stressful job, you've got issues with your family, your friends, your children, you're under a lot of stresses. So changing your life dramatically all at once can be extraordinarily difficult when you've got all these other pressures on you that are pushing you back into your old ways.
You know, I'm sure that one of the resolutions that people make either at the beginning of the year or any other time of year is to give up smoking. But there's another element here, aside from recognizing the fact that it's not bad, that it's bad for you, and that is that nicotine is addictive. You're dealing with more than just a desire to quit. You're fighting an actual addiction.
Yes, no, that's true, both with alcohol and nicotine. But really, food can kind of serve the same purpose. But alcohol and nicotine in particular are, and there's a genetic predisposition that I have known people who quit. When I was in graduate school, my mentor was a smoker, smoked two packs of cigarettes a day. This is many, many years ago. And he just said, one Friday, he told us, all the graduate students in his lab, I'm going to quit smoking. And he did. He just quit smoking. And we would ask him, is this bothering you? And he said, oh, I missed it the first couple of days, but no. Well, he had that genetic predisposition where he was not strongly hooked. Other people have tried to quit smoking many times and failed every time with patches and what have you. So quitting smoking and quitting alcohol are very difficult for people who are addicts. Mark Twain had a famous quote saying, there's nothing in the world easier than quitting smoking. I've done it so many times in my life.
Yeah, that's that is indeed a very famous quote, and one that I'm sure has been repeated by every smoker in this country at one time or another. We're talking with Professor Roddy Roediger, the co-author of Make It Stick, The Science of Successful Learning. And really what we're talking about is that when you make a commitment to do something, a resolution, if you will, how to make that happen instead of just falling off the wagon, as so many people do with their New Year's resolutions, for instance. We'll come back and continue our conversation. And I'd like to get your take on it, too. What do you think? Have you made resolutions and tried to keep them and failed, or made resolutions and tried to keep them and succeeded? Tell us what your secrets are, and we'll continue the conversation that way. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Roddy, you are an expert on memory. What does memory have to do with this process?
Well, I think everything in a way, because habit is partly memory. We don't normally think of it that way. It's not like remembering your childhood, but all of your behaviors are determined today, are determined by your past behaviors and how they have been encoded in your brain, stick in your brain. And so I think learning and memory is very much about habit, quite a bit of it at least. And so that's why, both cognitive psychologists and social psychologists and other psychologists come at these kinds of issues of how to keep resolutions.
Yeah, you talk in the book about rewiring the brain. I mean, that's a big deal.
Absolutely. So if you trying to change a habit that's been ingrained in you through years of experience, it's difficult to do. You've got to unlearn the old cues. So there's some cue. You see potato chips and you naturally crave those if you have an addiction for potato chips or chocolate or whatever it is. And so your natural inclination is to go for them. And so you've got to break that cue. You've got to look at those potato chips and then go for the carrots. If you're at a Super Bowl party yesterday, go for the healthy snack, not the one that you know will get you in trouble. You're probably not going to get addicted to carrots like some of us get addicted to salty potato chips.
You know, I think of this is not a Mark Twain quote, but different strokes for different folks. You talk about different methods people might use. You have to kind of figure out what's best for you. For instance, you put the suggestion in there, write down a couple of lines a day. I personally think that would not work for me.
Mm-hmm.
But it might be very, very effective for other folks. So you really got to figure out what works best for yourself.
Absolutely. There are lots of tips you can use, and you do have to figure out what will work for you, what will actually make it work. Some people find that telling themselves, reminding themselves throughout the day at set times, suppose you have a timer go off on your phone or some device that you recommit, you remind yourself, I've got to regulate, I've got to be careful, because it's very difficult, especially the first few weeks, to change a behavior that you've had for a very long time. Another technique that some people use and report good effects with is trying to use mental imagery, imagining what you will do in certain situations. And often this advice, as I see, is given in a wrong way. They'll tell you, imagine yourself 20 pounds lighter. Well, that's great. You would like to imagine yourself 20 pounds lighter, but what really helps you is imagining concrete steps that will get you there. Imagining yourself going into the party and having a glass of sparkling water instead of having a calorie-laden beer or glass of wine. That takes real self-control if you're not used to doing that. But you can imagine yourself doing that over and over and using this kind of guided imagery, not for just the end goal, but for all the steps along the way, seems to help. It helps to retrain your brain, your mind, if you will. Here are the behaviors I want to accomplish. And so you imagine yourself in difficult situations, but doing the appropriate thing instead of what you would normally do, eating the high-calorie stuff instead of the healthy stuff.
But, of course, there's a dynamic working against you at all times for some of the things we've been talking about. I'm thinking of the world of advertising. When you're trying to lose weight and you're being bombarded with commercials for 1,000-calorie cheeseburgers or the party atmosphere with the beer commercials that we see, this is really working against your best efforts.
Absolutely. Advertising is working against it, and so actually are these foods. That these foods companies spend a lot of money to have people figure out what's the best combination to get people essentially addicted to your food. I mean, a combination of sweet and salt and fat is very powerful. That there are these experiments that have been done where you can give people a substance that makes them lose briefly, just for a few moments, their sense of smell. And to some degree, smell is very intimately with taste. And when you do that with something like, I hate to pick a particular product, but let's just say a candy bar that has nuts and fat and chocolate in it, then suddenly when you put it in your mouth, it just tastes like lard. It's like somebody's put a big hunk of fat in your mouth because you no longer get all the sensation of the taste and you realize for what it is. But the way you normally eat it, the way we experience it, salt and fat and sweet, taste very good to us, and probably we've evolved such that those things are high in calories. And think about it, throughout most of human history, we had the problem of not having, in fact, many people still do today, of not having enough calories rather than having too many, which is so common in modern America today.
Does your research or has your research told you what is the thing that most people most often want to change? I mean, we keep talking about food, and I know that's got to be very, very high on the list.
I have not done such research, but if you just look at surveys of what people say they want to change, we've hit on most of them. There is eating is far and away the first, or losing weight, really, but that means changing in eating and changing exercise habits. Those are way up there. If you have a particular addiction, such as smoking or alcohol abuse or some other drug abuse, those, except for the people who don't, are so far gone they can't even imagine controlling the behavior, those are very high on the list. also.
What about having people nag you? You know what I'm saying? That somebody pesters you to stop doing whatever it is that you're doing that is objectionable, and they just don't let go of that.
Yes. I don't know of any research on that. Just my own intuition tells me that is not effective, that you seem to have a reactance against, there's a term, psychological reactance. When you're being nagged at something, you kind of want to naturally do the opposite. So nagging is probably not the best. Now, if you do publicly commit, as I suggested at the outset of our conversation, well, then you do raise the specter of people doing that. You'd like them to be supportive without being nagging.
On the other side of the coin, there are people who could be good role models for you that you should probably spend as much time with as possible.
Absolutely, and that's why having a group of people who want to change the same behavior can help. You can suggest strategies to each other. You can have weigh-ins with each other if it's losing weight. Or if it's exercise, you can exercise together. These don't have to be solitary enterprises. You look at the success of groups like Alcoholics Anonymous and Weight Watchers, where studies have shown that it's hard to do control studies because you would have to take a group of people that wouldn't go through the program and see what happens to them, and that's not always ethical, say. But nonetheless, many people at least report testimonials that these groups have been extraordinarily helpful to them. And it's quite imaginable in terms of what we know about psychology. You have a group of people to do something with you. It adds a social component that's very powerful, and you will not want to let the group down, and you'll want to be accepted by the group. And so if it's a group you can identify with and you become friends with the members of the group, that could be a very powerful positive inducement. And there are groups like that out there for most every behavior, smoking, drinking, other drugs, and so forth.
You know, it's a little wonder that so many people are not successful in changing these behaviors. It's a lot of work.
It's very, and you have to be thinking about it all the time. It's not something you just get out of bed and say in the morning, I'm going to do this. You've got to be on guard all day long. And when you've got to recognize a cue as a temptation, and, you know, it's like going into a bar if you want to cut down on drinking and then ordering a non-alcoholic drink. And that would be overriding what you normally do and have done for many years. And so it's a very difficult thing to change habits. It's just been commented on by people since the ancient days of Aristotle and Plato.
Are there references to this sort of thing going back that far?
Yes, back certainly the Romans had, you know, how to change behavior. They worried consciously about how you do this. I imagine the Greeks did too. I'm not enough of a classicist to know.
And of course, in that the Roman society of that day, excess was sort of commonplace.
Yes.
We have an email here from Paul who writes, in diet control, mindfulness works well along with knowledge of the change by researching the downsides of your current food and the benefits of new food. It can cause you to lose desires for junk food. I think that's part of your strategy as well.
Absolutely. I think if you read up on what things are doing to your body, it used to be when cigarettes were advertised on television, and still today you will see some kind of horrifying pictures of people dying of lung cancer, and you'll see images of their lungs, or you'll see pictures of them in a hospital bed just before death. And these are meant to shock the public and to scare them into changing their behaviors. So reading up on the ill effects of the substance you would like to stop. So I think that's a great piece of advice from your writer.
You know, that reminds me, just as an aside here, seems to me a couple of years ago they were talking about putting such pictures and warnings on packages of cigarettes, but I guess that's never happened.
No, I don't know why. I mean, they're powerful lobbies, of course. Our School of Public Health, I'm sure, would love to do that. Even the warnings on cigarettes seem to be pretty widely ignored. They have gotten stronger over time, and certainly there are all kinds of warnings on substances for pregnant women because of the known damages that alcohol nicotine and other substances can have for the developing baby. But that the really radical suggestions have not taken hold.
Yeah. We have a tweet here from Jody who writes, getting organized is a great habit that helps improve other habits. Example, an organized kitchen equals cook at home more and therefore eat more healthy food.
I think that's absolutely the case, and that you need to get your life organized in order to do some of these things, because you have to, usually if you go take time to do one thing, say exercise, that's time away from whatever you would have been doing at that point. And if you, if you really value that other behavior, you either have to squeeze it in, but something has to go. So you really do have to get more organized to change your life effectively.
You have done some work recently, as I understand it, with the military, with regard to the techniques that you present in your book. What kind of work are you doing with the military?
Well, we've had interest that our book, Make It Stick, has been widely read. I was by many people, coaches, teachers, trainers of all sorts, musicians, and we've been getting emails, my co-authors and I, about, for example, just to give you one, last fall, one of the trainers of the Navy SEALs wrote to me first, and said, I read your book and I'm worried that we're not training Navy SEALs the right way. I gave your book to my commander. He brought it back. Commander is Jay Hennessy. He brought it back and said, I think we might not be training SEALs the best way we could. And they, one thing led to another, and they invited Mark McDaniel and me out for 2 days at Coronado, California, where we spent learning all about how Navy SEALs are trained. There are also some good books on this. We didn't learn any big secrets. When I came home, all my friends asked what secrets we learned. The answer was none. They're not in the habit of telling visiting psychologists their secrets. But we did learn a lot about training. And there's a great book by Dick Couch called The Warrior Elite. And he followed the training of SEAL Class 238 through training, and so we read that book too. And so we gave a presentation to about 60 trainers of Navy SEALs. Most of them were either current or past Navy SEALs themselves and their commander. And we suggested the tips that are in the book, and they're the ones that are counterintuitive. This is a little bit off the topic of resolutions, but in our book, The Science of Successful Learning, we talk about how learning in some ways is counterintuitive, that some of the things we normally do that we think are so good only help us in the short term and not the long term.
Let's go over these seven steps here as time is beginning to get away with us.
Sure.
I'll start. The first one is powerful verbs. You've already addressed that early on.
Yes.
But very quickly, that means what?
That means saying to yourself, I'm committed to doing this. I'm determined to doing this. Not, I think I want to try.
Right. And the next one is public commitment. Let folks know what you're doing.
Again, yes. Your family, your close friends especially.
And daily reminders.
Yes. Don't just remind yourself in the morning. Have cues all day long. Remind yourself anytime you get into a tempting situation.
Physical cues for positive actions.
I haven't really talked about that, but a lot of people say you're living in a household where you're overweight, but your family's mostly okay, and they keep crackers and cookies and stuff you really shouldn't have around. Some people actually put little post-it notes on the refrigerator or on the pantry door, reminding you as you go in to get the healthy food.
Constructive imagery.
That's imagining the concrete steps repeatedly, that imagining walking in the party and picking up the carrots and the celery.
Friendly support?
That's having a group to do whatever the behavior is you're trying to change. Get a group to help you and do it with you.
And preferably have some pretty good role models.
Absolutely.
As part of that. And number seven on your list of seven steps is self-compassion, dogged persistence.
This is, I think, a great one. So many people, you're on a diet, and for whatever reason, you go out to dinner and you break it. Maybe you're going to a friend's house, and everything they serve at the meal is something you're really on your forbidden list. And so the easiest thing to do is you eat the meal, to be polite, and then you say, oh, I've broken my diet, and you give up. The thing to do, you'll occasionally have slips. You want to get back to it. You want to recommit yourself. Don't let one slip. defeat you.
We have to let it go right there. Professor Roddy Roediger, a co-author of Make It Stick, The Science of Successful Learning. Great suggestions for all of this. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Don.
Coming up, films for kids. It's all happening at the zoo. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.